Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're taking a shortcut, really, right into the mind of a seasoned venture advisor. We've gotten our hands on this fantastic stack of sources that lays out the brutal metrics for startup success. What it really takes.
Yeah.
And the core issue we're jumping into is this. It's a simple conflict, really. Most founders, especially the first-timers, they're right. They have a brilliant idea. They see a gap in the market. They got some new tech.
Yeah.
But what these sources make incredibly clear is that the idea, that's maybe 5% of the battle. The real problem is that very few founders have or even realize they need all the other pieces, the holistic experience.
The operational stuff, the team, the execution, the financial plan.
Exactly. It's like you can draw a perfect map, but that doesn't mean you have the supplies or the stamina to actually make the journey.
That's a perfect analogy. And look, our goal here for you is not to be discouraging at all. It's to give you the checklist, the one the people writing the checks are using. When they look at a new company, the first step isn't to, you know, just start cutting people. It's forensic.
Mm-hmm.
It's about getting a real fact-based picture with solid metrics.
Like an MRI for the business.
Precisely. It forces the founders to see themselves clearly. Where are we, really? What are we missing? And maybe most importantly, how is everyone else going to see us once the curtain is pulled back? You have to start from that baseline.
So how do they get that picture? The sources talk about a really formal analytical framework. I think they called it WISA. Something like that.
That's the one. And it's basically a full diagnostic. It runs a check on the entire operational structure of the company. It's less of a survey and more of an interrogation, really.
An interrogation of their readiness.
It really is. It measures these key operational areas.
That
are believed to be absolutely essential for scaling a business. And over years, they've collected the data to show how these things correlate directly to valuation and, you know, the actual chances of success.
Okay, so I want to walk through this like a guide. Let's go through those six pillars they measure. Systematically, what are they?
Right. Let's call them the six levers of success. The first one is governance and management. Now, people hear that and they tune out. They think it's for big public companies.
Wait, hold on. If I'm two people in a garage, governance is one of my top six priorities, really.
It has to be because it gets at fundamental risk. Who owns what? How do you make big decisions? If you don't have a clean cap table and a clear process from day one, I mean, you're just planting poison pills in the foundation of your own company. Investors know that. They know future lawsuits almost always start with bad governance early on. It's a sign of maturity.
Okay, that makes sense. What's number two?
Number two is marketing and sales. Sounds simple, right? Who sells what to whom and how? But the measurement here is all about the process, the metrics. We're talking customer acquisition cost versus lifetime value. Is your path to getting a customer repeatable? Is it scalable? And is it profitable?
So they're less interested in the flashy PowerPoint and more interested in the engine underneath. Is there one thing that always trips people up here?
Oh, absolutely. It's the inability to defend their customer acquisition cost, the CACs. Founders come in with these huge revenue projections, but they have no idea what it actually costs in time and money to get one single paying customer. If your CAC is higher than your margin, you don't have a business model. You have a very expensive hobby.
An expensive hobby. Ouch. Okay, pillar three.
Third is execution and fulfillment. This is the boring stuff that actually makes a company work. Who does what to deliver on the promises you made to customers? It's about internal discipline. Can you deliver on time?
And the fourth pillar is intellectual property and special sauce. I'm guessing that means patents.
It's way broader than just patents. It's expertise, copyrights, trade secrets, even how you use the IP of others. But the most critical part is your monetization strategy for that IP. You can have a world-changing technology, but if you don't have a clear plan to turn it into repeatable revenue, it's just research. It's not a business.
Right. Defensibility and a path to profit.
Exactly. Fifth is the financial situation and path. This is the snapshot. Current health, burn rate, investment history, and how believable the future projections are. And finally, number six is the legal situation. The foundation, contracts, regulations, all the boxes have to be ticked. These six. Governance, marketing, execution, IP, finance, and legal. You have to be functional in all of them.
Okay, let's unpack this. So once a founder puts all their data into the system across those six categories, that's when the Jawas thing runs its reality check. And the sources say the most revealing part isn't the final score. It's the gap between the CEO's self-assessment and what the objective data actually says.
That's the moment. That's the aha moment. Or, you know, sometimes it's the oh no moment. It forces this painful but totally necessary recalibration. And the sources point to five basic inconsistencies that just show up again and again.
Okay, what's the first one?
Number one, stage of development versus financials. A founder feels like they've poured years of their life, blood, sweat, into the product. They feel like they're 80% done. But then you look at the financials, the revenue, the profit, the cash, and it looks like 10% progress. They just don't get it. They're confused. They're disappointed.
It's a huge emotional disconnect, right? Yeah. They're mistaking all their effort for measurable progress.
Exactly. Effort is infinite. Your bank account is not. The second one is growth pattern versus investor expectations. Startups just have this completely unrealistic view of what investors actually need to see.
But wait a second. Don't investors want to see that huge confidence? Those massive hockey stick projections.
They do, but it has to be grounded. The delusion comes in when founders just adjust their numbers upwards to what they think investors want to see, but they can't explain the how. The analysis just reveals these massive holes in their execution plan. They can't explain the operational steps to get to that massive growth.
So they've picked a destination, but I have no idea how to actually drive the car.
Perfect. And that leads to number three. What they have done versus what they believe they can do. Confidence is vital, we all know that, but it has to be backed by a track record. A founder is certain they can scale to 1 million users. But when you look at their history, measured across all six of those pillars, their actual accomplishments are tiny in comparison. The system basically says, show me, don't just tell me.
History of execution is everything.
Okay.
Okay, but the fourth one, this sounds like the one that can just completely torpedo the entire business model, their view of the market.
This is maybe the most common and the most devastating. Founders just get their total addressable market, their TAM, so wrong, by orders of magnitude sometimes.
How so?
So the source gave this brilliant example. Imagine you've invented a new industrial laser. It's better, faster, cheaper, amazing. You think your TAM is the entire laser market today.
Sounds logical to me.
But it's not. Because when you dig in, you find out that most factories have lasers embedded in these huge machines that are designed to last for 50 years. 50. So your actual addressable market isn't the whole industry. It's just the 2% that are up for replacement this year. That one piece of market realism changes everything. Your hyper growth plan just became a 50-year slog.
Wow. I can just picture the silence in the room when that realization hits. That's brutal.
It is. But it's better to find out then than after you've burned through millions of dollars. And finally, number five. This one's almost funny, but it's not. It's the ability to follow directions.
You're kidding.
I'm not. Despite detailed instructions, onboarding guides, checklists, very few people actually read and follow directions. The source says they waste a shocking amount of time answering questions that are already right there in the materials. It seems small, but it shows a lack of discipline. If you can't follow a simple guide, how can an investor trust you with complex regulations?
It's a proxy for diligence.
A huge one.
Okay, this is where it gets really interesting for me. Once you get past that reality check, you just run face first into the statistics of startup survival. And the sources are so blunt. Starting a business is hard, persistence is key, but the time it takes might be more than you can afford.
They are blunt, and the numbers are sobering. Let's start with year one. About 80% of startups do not survive the first year.
80%. In the first 12 months, does that number hold up across different industries?
It's surprisingly consistent. And the key is how they define survive. It doesn't mean just having a business name. It means you're actually selling something, generating revenue, performing for a customer. If you get past year one actually doing business, you are, and I'm quoting the source here, indeed a rare bird.
A rare bird. Okay. So for that 20% that do survive, what happens when they get funding?
Right. So this next stat is for companies that are good enough to pass due diligence and actually get investment. For those companies, 92% only get the investor to break even.
Wait, say that again. 92% just break even.
Or fail completely. So the entire venture capital model is banking on the remaining 8% being massive, astronomical home runs.
That just changes everything about valuation, doesn't it?
Completely. That's the math. That's why investors need those huge returns from the winners. It's why they can't fund a nice lifestyle business. That 92% rate means they have to ignore most companies. And those big returns, they usually take more than 5 years, often more than 10, to actually materialize.
So when a founder is arguing about their valuation, They're not seeing this side of the equation. The price has to reflect the insane odds of failure.
Exactly. The risk penalty is massive. And that brings us to the last big statistic, the experience factor. Most successful outcomes for entrepreneurs happen on their third or later attempt. The source is pretty direct on this. It says, if you have less than two previous failed startups, you probably just don't know enough yet.
So you need two failures on your resume just to be considered competent. That's a tough pill to swallow.
It is, but it's about learning the hard lessons. The first failure teaches you what it feels like to run out of money. The second teaches you that you can't just delegate leadership. By the third time, you get it. You understand capital. You understand the market. You understand the importance of getting the governance and the legal right from day one. You stop mistaking your confidence for actual competence.
And the source mentioned something interesting about early success, right? That it might be a bad sign.
A very crucial nuance. An early big success might just be luck, good timing. And that can lead to dangerous overconfidence on the next venture. The founders who have a successful exit and still come in for this kind of structured analysis, those are the ones who get it. They know they might have gotten lucky, and they want to add rigor the next time around.
So wrapping this all up, what's the big takeaway? It's that starting from scratch is incredibly hard, and the metrics are there to basically shortcut the painful learning process.
Absolutely. The punishment for ignoring these six pillars is very real. The market will punish you. Advisors are just trying to help you see the risks before they blow up your company.
Which brings us to their final thought. Luck favors the prepared mind. And the whole point of this is that you must be prepared. This brutal honesty is meant to help, not to hurt. So we've walked through the six operational pillars: governance, marketing, execution, IP, finance, and legal. And we've looked at the five pitfalls that reveal those inconsistencies. Now, for you listening to this, here's the provocative thought we want to leave you with, thinking about your own idea or your current project. Which one of those six requirements is the single area you would need to focus on right now to prove to an experienced advisor that your mind is truly prepared for the long, challenging journey ahead?